Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Captain Storm number 15, cover date September-October 1966, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Irv Novik, edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring My Enemy, My Friend, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Jack Abel. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go-go!
Wonder what you gonna do when the morning light comes shining through. You thought about it all last night until darkness turned into light.
Captain Storm and his crew encounter an American plane floating at sea. An enemy sub makes their position and begins to attack, and Captain Storm is thrown overboard. Concerned? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
Something about sailing the ocean green and having a wooden hand and a wooden foot.
You know, something that this gentleman on the cover wouldn't need.
Gloves.
And?
Nope.
Whatever you just put on your fingernails, it's about to make me pass out.
OPI, Nail Envy, Nail Strengthener.
It smells like poison.
It's fine.
I hope you didn't get any on your skin.
I did not.
Okay. Don't suck your finger either, because that'll...
I'm not an idiot.
Did you ever have Mercurochrome when you were growing up?
Oh, did I ever? Oh, yes, I was practically covered in it. I was a very, very reckless child. I spent all of my time outdoors and a lot of time barefoot.
I would use Mercurochrome just for even imaginary ailments.
You would not?
Yes.
Okay.
Like it's for cuts, right?
Right.
Well, I'd use it for if I just like stuck my toe or something. I'd put Mercurochrome on it.
Well, you know what's so funny is, as an adult,
yep.
How often do you stub your toe?
I don't know, about once every 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
I never, ever stub my toe. But as a child, I used to stub my toe very frequently. Do you suppose it has something to do with like coordination, developmental coordination?
I don't know. I know someone who never stubs their toe.
What a nice segue.
Captain Storm.
Yeah.
PT boat skipper. Guess what I learned this week?
What did you learn?
The Captain Storm does not actually hold the rank of captain. He's a lieutenant.
That's true. He's a lieutenant.
Which I guess lieutenants during the war, they can captain PT boats.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
It's a patrol boat, yep.
I thought he was actually a captain.
Nope.
Well, they should have just called it Lieutenant Storm.
Well, it's okay. Captain Storm kind of rolls off your... tongue.
Yes,
better than Lieutenant
yes.
Storm. Lieutenant Storm.
And I guess probably like Captain Cold is not actually holding the rank of captain, or Captain Marvel for that matter.
Oh, right. Did they go to superhero school and graduate at the top of their class and then serve some time and then get promoted to captain? Captain Marvel, rather. I think Captain Cold is probably a villain, right?
Well, in Captain Marvel's case, of course, I'm talking about the real Captain Marvel, not the girl Captain Marvel. There are Lieutenant Marvels, and so...
Oh. You're talking about the classic comic book,
yes,
Captain Marvel.
Yes,
what do we call it, the Silver Age or the...
Golden Age.
Oh, are you taking an imperious tome with me about mixing...
About ages,
silver?
Yes.
Oh, for the love of God. Hey.
Yeah?
Before we dive in.
Yeah.
How was your week?
You know, it was okay. Yeah. Just a normal, you know, week.
Yeah.
Went bowling for work.
That was fun.
Yeah. Except I drank too much Coca-Cola and I couldn't sleep that night.
You sure did. I didn't touch that Coca-Cola.
Well, I know better now.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, just pretty average.
Pretty average week,
I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of gray skies all week. And,
it was weird. The weather was weird this week. It wasn't cold, but we did have some days of drizzle and then days of bright sunshine. And the last 24 hours has been strange. We'll have these storms come in, these quiet storms. They're not really storms, but these quiet, you know, it rains and then it dries up and then it rains and then it dries up. It's just so strange.
And all the blossoms are blowing off the trees.
I know, indeed. And we did manage to cut the grass today, so yes. That was good. Yeah.
But I disagree that it was cold because I had the heat on earlier in the week. Because I'm always cold. I'm like 1,000 years old.
No. I forgot. On Monday, I think, or Tuesday, it was chilly. Yeah.
You know whose leg never gets cold?
Captain Storm, because he doesn't have any feeling in his leg.
Also, he's going swimming in the boiling Pacific. Mm. Did you know the Pacific could boil?
I like you say, everything you learn from comics. So I guess I'm going to learn that the Pacific can boil.
Captain Storm, number 15. We dare you to decide who is the friend and who is the foe. The wooden-legged American PT boat skipper or the wooden-armed Japanese sub-commander in the battle shocker of the Naval War.
My enemy, my friend.
Have we told that story ever before?
My property, city property?
Yeah.
I'm sure we have.
Okay, well, if anybody's interested, listener, in hearing the My Property, City Property story,
send us a note and we'll bring it into the next podcast.
A wooden arm.
Mm-hmm.
I know this was, 70 years ago? Okay. World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Did they really make prosthetic arms out of wood?
I don't really know what they made, but it was wartime.
It was wartime, but he certainly would have a hook hand or something.
A hook hand?
Or a hook hand.
Ta-da!
Or just a stump, right?
Not a stump.
Well, not a stump, but a wooden... And look, it's jointed at the wrist so that he can...
Oh, I think that just might be some sort of art choice.
Well, let's dive into the story and see if we can find out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Captain Storm needs?
What?
A 7-foot-long cardboard Polaris nuclear sub, which fires rockets and torpedoes.
Well, I was more interested
and
in
seats two kids.
In the electronic computer brain. Having yes. watched 2001 A Space Odyssey last night.
Right. The electronic computer brain is educational, fun at parties.
It solves riddles.
And even tells fortunes.
Fortunes.
It adds, subtracts, multiplies, and memorizes.
Mm.
It measures 12 inches by 3.5 inches by 4 inches. It is open, so complete operations can be viewed.
Mm.
It's a miracle of the modern space age. It's an actual working digital computer that is designed simply and visually to demonstrate the apparatus hidden within the circuits of the giant brains of today.
You will be able to add, subtract, multiply, solve problems, solve riddles, even check out Dad's bank balance and see that it is right. This magnificent little machine will shift, complement, carry, memorize, count, compare, and sequence.
Of course, in those days, Mom couldn't have her own bank account. Digitomp can even be trained for fun, such as fortune telling, etc. Mm-hmm. And think how amazed all your friends will be when you solve problems of missile countdown, satellite reentry, and missile checkout.
Good Lord.
Designed in plastic, this mechanical analog of a binary computer is blah, blah, blah. And is open, so its fascinating operation can be viewed. It can be assembled in less than 1 hour and is complete with all parts. Assembly chart and full 28-page operations manual, which shows how to check the unit out, program problems, solve riddles, and try experiments. To think, we can do all this on our telephones now.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
Even monitor Dad's bank balance.
Mm-hmm.
PT boat skipper Captain Storm owes his life to his enemy. And now he's got to try to save said enemy. Because anything can happen, Rob.
Okay, I gotta stop you right now.
Yeah, what?
This effing yellow box with the words. Anything can happen in the boiling Pacific.
Boiling. I told you it's boiling. Uh-huh.
But I never expected to owe my life to a man who had taken an oath to kill me. Okay, listen. But when I put down my life to save him, his only thought was to die and take me with him. Who was he? A Japanese sub-commander. My enemy, my friend. This stupid thing.
What?
This my enemy, my friend comes 3 times in the first 4 pages. Like we've forgotten. Forgotten.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I do like that every time it says the word enemy, it's in like Japanese Comic Sans.
Comic Sans, yeah.
What do they call the, with the brush and the ink?
Calligraphy?
Calligraphy, Japanese mm-hmm. calligraphy mm-hmm. font. At a lake in Central Park, this is a flashback. This is one thing I don't like about Captain Storm stories.
What?
Because it seems like they always are just jumping backwards and forwards in time and you never really know where you are.
There's a lot of setup in this. We get yes. two huge sequences of setup.
So this is apparently a flashback to several years ago.
Oh well, I think I stopped you from telling something very important. The splash page
yes.
has the two of them fighting underwater
yeah.
with Captain Storm giving the Japanese lieutenant a punch across the chin
right.
and holding on to... Wait a second.
What?
On the cover, the Japanese man, lieutenant, has his left hand is wooden.
Mm-hmm.
In this, his right hand is wooden. And if I'm correct in remembering the hospital scene that we're going to see, I think the right hand is wooden too.
Oh.
Only well. A left-handed man would realize that. Okay, let's get back. So they're fighting underwater, and both of them start... having flashbacks
right.
of why their life journeys that took them up to this point. Hang on, reader.
So,
listener.
Many years ago, at a lake in Central Park, young Johnny Storm splashes at his favorite sport, playing with boats in the river. Now,
in the Central Park.
Sorry. First of all, I know what you're thinking. It's not that Johnny Storm. Mm-hmm. Second of all, apparently it's not Captain Storm either because... every source on the internet that I can find, including DC's Who's Who, lists his name as William Storm.
Well, I think it was either a mistake by the writer, which it probably was.
Obviously,
wasn't.
Yes.
I mean, it would, and the writer, if the writer was called to explain that, the writer might have said, well, his nickname was Johnny.
This is written by Robert Kaniger. I'm assuming that maybe the first name of William just hadn't been... created
yet. They would have called him Billy Storm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did you have a nickname growing up?
No. No, and I always wanted one, and nobody would ever give me a nickname, except for my grandmother, Mrs. White, who, you know, my middle name is White.
Uh-huh.
And she would say, Bob White, Bob White, because like the bird, you know.
All the time?
A lot, yeah.
My goodness. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you don't like it.
Well, also, it's a stupid middle name.
Oh, I like your middle name. It's fine.
Well...
it's a family name. It's, you know...
your middle name is much more majestic. William. Like William Storm.
Interesting.
On the other side of the Pacific, at that same hour and day, young Hiro Satomi is equally enthused when he's playing with the wooden boat, pretending to sink an American boat.
Death to the enemies of our empire! Banzai!
Now, this would have been, let's say this is 20 years ago.
Well.
So it would have been the 1920s. America and Japan weren't at war in the 1920s that I recall. I mean, I was busy then making kinetoscopes and starting my showbiz career, but.
Were you on vaudeville yet?
Yes, I had done the Orpheum circuit.
Had you?
Yeah.
What was your act?
Dainty Bob, the Child Wonder.
Dainty Bob, the Child mm-hmm. Wonder. Wow. What sort of tricks did you do in your act? Well, of course, you sang.
And I
you
sang, yes. Did you dance, too? I did dance, tap dancing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a sensation. Rope tricks.
Rope tricks, too?
Yeah. Cowboy rope trips.
Did you have a dog in your act?
No, because there was a dog act also in the same circuit. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Is that where you learned to play the accordion?
No. But I did learn ventriloquism there.
You did not.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that act, but I was very busy working in Florida as a revolutionary.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Fighting the Spanish.
Right. Not the Japanese, to be clear, because the Japanese were not at war with us at that time. I really was bothered by a lot of the panels thinking that the little sailor suits like these young lads are wearing didn't really exist in the 1920s. Although
British sailor suits.
Right, I Googled that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't expect to see the boys in Central Park in shorts and dungarees and things. They would have been wearing proper clothes.
Well, they would have
or
had
knickers or something.
Yeah, they would have had short pants.
Well, I don't think they'd show that much leg. 1920s.
Yeah. I would agree.
Not in public.
Okay. I'm looking to see if their short pants are rolled up because they would generally wear.
Johnny Storm's are.
Yeah.
I also got very excited thinking that Hiro's Satumi would translate to John Storm.
Oh.
But it doesn't. Okay. It's not nearly that clever.
That's too bad.
Years later, at an officers' club in the U.S. Naval Base at Pearl Harbor, a elderly officer type is asking.
He's smoking a pipe and it's in his mouth as he's talking.
Yeah, so he's asking Lieutenant Storm, how much is your PT boat worth, Lieutenant Storm?
Translation, how much is your PT boat worth, Lieutenant Storm?
My life, sir, if I don't chicken out when the chips are down. And at that exact same moment in Tokyo.
How valuable would you say your submarine is worth to the Empire, Lieutenant Satomi?
It's also an officer smoking a long cigarette in a holder. Who says, how valuable would you say your submarine is worth to the Empire, Lieutenant Satumi?
My miserable life is worthless compared to the damage my submarine can do against the ships of the U.S. fleet, sir.
Now, one blistering day in the boiling Pacific again. The Pacific doesn't boil. Hopefully, if it does, we're all in trouble.
Well, I've seen a lot of those war movies, and they're always sweating, so I'm assuming it was quite hot.
One blistery day in the boiling Pacific, the battle fates hurl the two men together for the real answer. They are atop a Japanese sub, engaging in fisticuffs. Lieutenant Storm tells the Lieutenant Satumi that he has saved his life, that Satumi has saved Storm's life.
Yes. We don't know yet why or how it happened, right. So we have to do another flashback.
So I'm going to try to save yours, even if I die trying. Mm-hmm. Just then, an American plane flies overhead. Who is talking to himself in the cockpit.
Oh, so again, we get this. Who is the friend and who is the foe?
Yes.
Who is the enemy in this strange battle to the death on a diving Japanese sub in the Pacific? Is it the U.S. Navy Helldiver, which sees only its target? And then right below that, in the next panel, who is the friend and who is the foe in this fight to the death on the deck of the diving Japanese sub as it's being staffed by an American plane? Being strafed. Strafed?
Strafed? That should strafed? Be strafed. There's strafed? Not two Fs in that.
I'm
going to Google that.
Yeah, by an American plane. That's what bothered me. This whole like, who is the friend and who is the foe? That language comes up three times in about four pages.
I think it would be effective if this were like an audio drama.
I suppose.
You know what I mean? Like, it would be escalating
in
intensity. But
we didn't choose to do an audio drama this time, did we?
No, we didn't.
I don't do a Japanese accent.
I wouldn't attempt it.
No.
You couldn't, you could have if you just made bigger letters.
So strafed?
Yeah, strafe. Strafed. Everyone knows that's not a word. Kaniger.
You've got to live!
This plane starts shooting. Captain Storm says, you've got to live. The Japanese lieutenant says, no, both of us must die.
Die!
Who is he, my mother?
Yeah, right.
Listener, once I was in the grocery store as a tiny child.
As a wee thing.
3 or 4 years old. And I toddled up to my mother with a box of crayons or something else tempting to children. And I said, you've got to buy me this.
You've just got to.
And what do you think my mother said?
She looked you straight in the eyes and said,
I don't have to do anything but die. On another occasion, same mother, same grocery store, I shoplifted a pack of Viewmaster reels based on the popular children's television show Land of the Lost. I did not own a Viewmaster, but I did love Land of the Lost. So I got those reels and got them home and opened them on my bed. Mm-hmm. The price was $1.50. Mm-hmm. And mistakenly left them laying on my bed when I went down to dinner.
Oh, my.
Well, mother found them and immediately knew she had not purchased them for me.
Right.
So she took me back to the store, led me to the front door of the store by my earlobe.
Ooh.
Sent me in alone to talk to the store manager and said, if they take you to jail, there's nothing I can do.
Oh.
Then the store manager told me that I had broken my mother's heart. And that brings us right up to the present day in our lovely park-like neighborhood where I'm the HOA president. So screw you, store manager. Store's not there anymore. It was a big bear.
He's probably dead, too.
Probably. Mm-hmm. It's a giant eagle now.
Oh, okay.
They don't carry Viewmaster products. Now, this Japanese lieutenant drags both of them under the water, mm-hmm. which, ironically, saves their lives because the plane is shooting from above at the sub.
Mm-hmm.
The depth charge that the plane launches misses the submarine.
What page are you on?
I'm on page 4.
Okay.
The Japanese sub commander says, what does it matter if I die? I have proved my worth as a samurai warrior at last, saved my command, and taken the enemy who foolishly wished to save my life down with me.
Flashback.
Flashback.
As if the sea was a shimmering screen on which Lieutenant Hiro Satomi could see the past.
A pretty lady who Lieutenant Phil Hunter would describe as a Oriental Cupid doll.
Uh-huh. She has big, high hair, doesn't she?
She really does. Well, I think she's not a proper lady. She's one of those geisha girls. Mm. She's giving Lieutenant Hiro Satomi a neck rub. Oh no! It's a lei.
Mm-hmm. Flowers.
Right. I will clarify that. Mm-hmm. Yep. So she's praising his heroism, but he says, "I have yet to prove myself in battle." Now, I guess we flash forward to being on a submarine now.
So just to be clear here, he's flashing back underneath the water
right.
to being called a hero by this, let's call her geisha girl. Now we're going to flash forward to him.
Still within the flashback.
But he still has his hand.
Right. So yes. This is still the flashback, but flashing forward.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that show, Flash Forward?
Nope.
That was a great show. Joseph Fiennes and everyone on Earth lost consciousness for 2 minutes and saw their futures.
Yes.
That was a great
show. It was a good show.
Before the sub can dive, so he's on the sub now, and he spots an American convoy on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, an American destroyer is attacking them from the rear.
Mm-hmm.
Hiro realizes they can't fight and dive at the same time, so he decides they're going to fight on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
He turns the sub around so that he can fire torpedoes at the destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
The destroyer is going to fire back, but the torpedoes find their mark.
He takes a shot, and it destroys the American destroyer.
Now, in the meantime, Hiro's sword arm, his right arm, as you noted, mm-hmm. opposite that on the cover, has been injured. He managed to raise his sword in victory, but that was the last thing his arm will ever do,
mm-hmm.
because it's got to be amputated. As the wounded sub-commander passes his first victory, he vows that this is not the end for him. He will be back to fight like a true samurai.
And then we go forward.
Flash forward, still within the flashback, in the naval hospital.
I will fight on. I will fight on. I will fight. And he has the same lines four times.
Right, right, right.
As he's proving himself by lifting his left arm and doing some workouts with the left arm, I assume adapting his fighting techniques to his left hand, yes. left arm, and taking up the sword in his left arm.
Even learning to sword fight with his left arm.
No, he's taken off. They've taken off most of his arm, that right arm. Yeah,
up to above the elbow. Mm-hmm. So the doctors agree, despite the loss of one arm, Lieutenant Satomi has proven himself fit for combat again. The Empire cannot lose the blazing services of such a samurai spirit. During that same period of time covered by the previous flashback, Captain Storm is having a flashback of his own, covering the same time that was covered in the flashback. Did I say that correctly?
Well done.
He's having a flashback at the same time as Hiro is having a flashback, and their flashbacks are happening
simultaneously and covering the same span of time.
Yes.
Yes.
They are contemporaries of one another.
Yes. So they might have even lost their appendages.
At the same moment.
At the same moment. Let's pretend it was the same moment.
Okay.
Yeah. Fate has inextricably tied these two together.
So Captain Storm is flashing back to the time when an enemy sub rammed his PT boat. Mm-hmm. And he was plunged underwater and lost a leg.
His crew. He also lost his crew.
His entire crew, yes.
Lost his PT boat, lost his crew. He was the only survivor, perhaps.
Like the Japanese, with whom later he was to be locked in battle beneath the surface of the Pacific, Lieutenant Storm also waged a relentless fight in the hospital.
I have to give credit to the writers for not somehow finding a way to weave in the words friend or foe into that yellow plot bubble.
Yes. Well done, writer.
There's such restraint.
Still within the flashback, we flash forward to when Lieutenant Storm is surfing with his wooden leg. And pretty...
Is it wooden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty nurse Leah, that's her name, I just happen to remember, is being complimented by the military brass for doing wonders with Lieutenant Storm. And she says, it wasn't me. It's the spirit in the lieutenant, which drove him on to prove himself combat ready.
So after his recovery, Lieutenant Tsunami roamed the waters of the South Pacific again.
Yes.
And this one guy, so Lieutenant Satomi, did I say Tsunami?
I don't remember.
So Lieutenant Satomi is looking in the periscope. Look at the guy who's standing beside him. He has very developed breasts.
Pecs. Yes.
Yes, they're a little too voluminous. Don't you think?
Well, they're not. I mean, they're not extending beyond the rest of his torso. I think it's just maybe a trick of the light as drawn by Irv Novik.
And his head is giant in comparison
to
his body.
He looks like he's carved out of stone.
Yeah. Yeah. But his pecs are very, very well developed, and they're pert.
They're high.
They're actually higher than normal pecs would be.
Right.
Yeah. They're almost chin pecs.
Well, maybe he's wearing shapewear. We don't know.
He could be wearing shapewear. Oh, didn't geisha girls bind their waists and their feet?
What? I don't know.
Geisha girls bind their waist? Maybe he's binding his waist.
Are you saying he's a geisha girl?
I don't know. It just struck me. I mean, if the listener happens to find this picture, it's quite obviously funny.
So they're in the South Pacific. The guy that has high pecs is reporting that an enemy convoy escorted by destroyers is on the horizon.
Let's call him Pexon.
Pexon says one of them is turning toward us. She must have picked us up on her sound detection gear, sir. She'll probably depth charge us soon. And Satomi says the Americans are no fools. They know we must have picked them up too, but they are probably counting on us to turn away. So what are we going to do? Attack head on. That's the way to do it, honestly. I mean, I've never commanded a sub, but I am president of the HOA. And so if there was a situation across the street at Ron's house, yeah, and they were trying to scare me off. No, just straight ahead. I'd write a strongly worded letter first, and then just march right over there. The destroyer is closing, and Satumi says we can't hit it with a bow shot at this distance.
Bow shot.
Sorry, I should have known that.
It's okay.
But the convoy is lined up like ducks behind her. So they're not even going to fire at the destroyer. They're going to fire at the convoy,
mm-hmm,
which is successful. The torpedoes slipped right past the destroyer, and now they're preparing for a depth charge attack.
I wonder what that is like.
What?
Depth charges when you're inside of the submarine.
It's probably, well, I've seen a lot of episodes of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. And so I know that they get shaken around a lot. Yeah. Sometimes it's by like a giant creature or actually the god Poseidon or some other giant human thing that lives under the sea that's not the god Poseidon or a lost civilization beneath the sea. But it's a lot of shaking.
So speaking of Poseidon, when mm-hmm, I was trying to imagine what it must be like to be in a submarine and have depth charges go on all around you, all right, I could think of was the Poseidon Adventure, starring, among many other stars, Ernest Borgnine and Shelley Winters.
Yes.
And so when I think about depth charges, I think about Shelley Winters falling as the ship goes and does a big turn, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's probably exactly
what it's like.
What it's like.
Yeah.
So they cannot dive out of range of the depth charges, but Satumi pushes on and says, make straight for the convoy. So the closer they get to the convoy, of course, the destroyer is not going to launch depth charges because they don't want to destroy their own ships.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they get underneath the convoy so that the sound of the sub is going to now mix with the engine noise from the convoy ships.
Hiding right underneath them.
Right underneath. They stay there, hidden, until the convoy passes. The destroyer makes one more final attack, which is unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sub surfaces. And Satumi gloats that the destroyer couldn't take a chance remaining in the waters, these waters, any longer under the light of the full moon, which is now shining.
By the light of the silvery moon.
Not a sun, but a moon.
Mm-hmm. He was forced to give up the search for us. We live to strike again.
Ah-ha-ha-ha.
On patrol one day, the American PT boat makes contact with...
Probably that very same day. The PT boat number 47, that's Captain Storm's boat. They see an enemy freighter on the horizon. The way she's riding low in the water, she must be loaded with gas or ammo. Let's see if we can get in and out before she realizes she's on her way to the bottom. So I guess PT boats are just like fast strike, like they call them mosquito boats. So they just go...
Yeah, they're pretty fast. And I don't think they have a lot of heavy artillery on them, but...
But
the patrol boats.
As the impudent mosquito boat
impudent
races up to the innocent-looking freighter, the freighter starts firing with big cannons. And these are not cannons that are hidden in caves like last week. These are cannons right up on the deck.
And Captain Storm says, we've been sucked into a trap of a fighting ship disguised as a freighter. She'll pound us into rice cakes before we can fire our tin fish at her. Our only chance is to...
circle her and put a curtain of smoke in between us. Now, I was not aware that boats had the capability to just shoot out plumes of black smoke.
It's in the comics. You have to believe it. So I was sitting there thinking about this. I'm like, okay, how did they do this? They probably... reduce the amount of oxygen mixing into the fuel, therefore increasing the smoke by not burning the fuel as efficiently.
Okay. Is that some kind of an instantaneous chemical reaction that can happen? Because it happens
right here in the panel. I'm assuming it's completely instantaneous.
Okay.
By will. He hits a switch. Smoke screen.
It could be that they've got a metahuman on board that has smoke powers.
Could be.
I mean, that's not mentioned in the text, but you could extrapolate that that's the case.
Okay. Desperately, the PT boat hurls out a wall of smoke behind which she speeds.
Yes.
Behind which she speeds.
So they're behind the smoke now. They're just zipping around, avoiding the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this Japanese boat now is firing blindly. Captain Storm orders them to ready torpedoes.
So they do have torpedoes.
Yes.
And I'm assuming they have rifles.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They fire the torpedoes, and they hit their mark. The JG's really happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's for Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, miles away, as the mosquito boat buzzed through the water, they see a plane, an American plane, which is downed on the water.
It's a water plane.
Yeah, but yeah. It's still just like sitting there.
Right,
like
right. Sitting down in the ocean.
So the reply came on the radio that there's another plane in the air who is mother henning the downed plane until it can fix its feed line.
Right.
And take off again.
Lieutenant Woods is wait, no. We're
calling him. Yeah, well, there, yeah, yeah. He says there are a load of brass on the downed plane.
Mm-hmm.
The plane that's in the air says, I'd rather you don't hang around because it might attract too much attention.
Okay.
Captain Storm agrees. Over and out, but a few miles away, the submarine spots the PT boat. And as the sub's prow surfaces and knifes up through the water, they fire torpedoes at the PT boat.
They sure do.
Captain Storm orders them to turn hard to starboard, and radio Lieutenant Woods.
Now it does he so like it says like a winged mosquito PT-47 slips out of the way of the enemy torpedoes. But oh look, hey, there's a machine gun mounted on the deck of the PT boat. Okay, we were curious about the
weapons right.
I had on board. So, so he gets tossed off.
He slips.
The bow, yeah.
Specifically, mm-hmm. He slips mm-hmm. off and falls into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The PT boat is now, you know, trying to find their captain.
But they're also taking shots from the submarine.
Right. So he dives under the ocean to make both the submarine and his own crew think that he's dead.
Dead, yep.
So that they won't come after him. He finally surfaces. Gloating in the fact that he was able to save his boat and crew when the chips were down. The PT boat has escaped, and Captain Storm is climbing aboard the submarine where he's taken prisoner. Yes, you have a question.
He says, I finally remembered the $64 question. Is that line in reference to some sort of game show?
There was a game show called the $64,000 question, which of course would have been years after this.
Okay.
I don't know. It might have been a radio game show. Hmm. You want me to Google it right quick?
Well, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Hey, Butler.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Hello, Captain Butler.
Captain Butler's our hound dog, of course.
Yes, he came in for a back scratch. Actually, he probably came in to remind you that it's his time to go for a walk.
The $64 question
uh-huh.
is taken from the title of the 1940s radio program, Take It or Leave It.
Well
in which
done.
The big prize was 64 silver dollars.
Ooh, 64 silver dollars.
Yes.
That'd be a nice little prize, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, they're still just worth a dollar.
Well, still, a silver dollar has a lot of weight to it, and 64 silver dollars feels like something substantial.
I guess.
It does.
I'd rather have the 64,000.
Of course. Let's get back to the story.
Of course, you know the famous story about that.
No, I don't.
Dr. Joyce Brothers, popular psychotherapist, guest star of the 70s TV shows.
Yes.
She got her start by playing on the $64,000 question, and you had to, like, choose a specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And so she chose boxing as her specialty. When she didn't actually know anything about boxing, she went out and learned every single fact that she could about boxing. And she won the $64,000. Well, then the $64,000 game show was embroiled in controversy because it turned out they were giving players answers. If they found a popular player, they would just give them the answers so they would keep winning and keep being on the show.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And the only person that came out squeaky clean was Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I know things.
Okay.
About pop culture.
Now let's really get back to the comic.
Okay. So Lieutenant Storm and Lieutenant Satumi are up here on the deck of the submarine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you before we got to talk about the fact that Lieutenant Satumi helped Lieutenant Storm up onto the deck, and in doing so also killed the shark that was stalking Lieutenant Storm.
What?
Center panel. If I hadn't been checking the sides, I wouldn't have been able to reach the shark that was stalking you, Lieutenant.
Oh, I see. That's very poorly illustrated.
Very poorly illustrated. That shark looks like it is nowhere near the sword that he's holding.
Yeah, and we don't actually see him strike the shark. Yep. We just see his sword come down.
Very poorly done.
Yes. Badly done.
Badly done.
So, this Satumi had seen Captain Storm dive under the water when his men were looking for him. And he understands that Captain Storm did that to send them away to save them from the gunfire of the sub. You acted like a samurai.
Yeah.
And Captain Storm says, is it in the samurai code to save an enemy's life, Lieutenant?
And then fate kicks in once more to the story. And we could have seen two men offering peace to one another, we get back to battle.
Right. So now we're back to the beginning of the story where we saw the plane firing at the sub while Captain Storm and Satumi were wrestling on the deck. And they Satumi throws Storm into the ocean so that they can escape the destruction of the sub.
By the way, I don't know, listener, if you can hear that noise in the background. Butler is out in the hallway on the carpet, just rolling around on his back, going, enjoying his best life.
Is he enjoying it, or is he determined to interrupt our podcast? That's my take. So the lieutenant, Satumi, runs out of air and passes out, giving Captain Storm the chance to save his life at last, even against Satumi's will.
And of course, did I interrupt you? The submarine does go down.
It does, and it explodes, actually.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that Satumi intentionally shielded Captain Storm from the exploding sub. You've got to hang on, Satumi. Help is coming soon. One of my planes is down in the water near us. Hang on. But Satumi replies,
no. No, Lieutenant. The thread of my life is cut. Do me the favor of letting me join. There's all these dots, these ellipses. Join my ship. Thank you. Sayonara. And Captain Storm says, sayonara.
And then the text box says,
who is the friend and who is the foe in this strange fight to the death?
As PT Boat Skipper Storm is rescued from the water by the alerted PBY.
What's a PBY?
I don't know. Plane by you? Could that be it?
I don't know. Are you looking it up?
I am.
PBY.
Consolidated PBY Catalina is a flying boat, an amphibious aircraft that was produced in the 1930s and 40s.
Okay.
In Canadian service, it was known as the... We may never know because the internet's so slow. The Canso.
Okay. So, as the PT boat skipper Storm is rescued from the water by the alerted PBY, which is in a plane that is it amphibious plane?
Yes.
Okay.
PBY, patrol bomber.
Okay.
The Y simply denotes the manufacturer, which was Consolidated Aircraft Company, which famously doesn't contain the letter Y.
So the officer who is standing on the plane that's greeting Captain Storm as he pulls up out of the water, he says to Captain Storm, who are you crying for?
That's what he says out loud. Inside, he says, who are you crying for? Crybaby.
Soldier.
Who is he crying for?
Sailor. Actually, he's a sailor.
A lieutenant. Sir.
Bonnie doesn't do gasp. You don't see the gasp there.
No, but lots of ellipses, as you noted. Yeah, yeah. The end.
The end. What'd you think?
I like the idea of the story. Mm-hmm. I like this kind of like enemies having to work together. And
me too.
That trope.
But, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please.
It was fine.
That's fine. Yeah. I would have liked a little bit more, a better drawing of the shark attack.
Yes.
And the flashbacks were okay. But that, as I said, that text box that appeared over and over again, the words friend or foe appeared 4 times in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got it. Okay. We got it.
And I think they missed an opportunity to have a recurring foe for Captain Storm, because that would be a nice touch if amputee Japanese lieutenant came back again and again.
Mortal enemy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that not knowing if maybe he will, because we don't actually see, I mean, we do see his bullet-riddled body sink to the bottom of the ocean, but this is comics.
Lieutenant Satomi.
Yes.
Was a really good match for Captain Storm.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, in his personal history, in his character, in his disabilities that he overcame, really excellent match for a larger than life match for Captain Storm.
They're like two sides of the same silver dollar.
Silver dollar. There you go.
Well, we may never know what happened to Lieutenant Satomi, if he lived. And we may never know who is the friend and who is the enemy.
The frenemy.
Frenemy, yep. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, I think I really enjoyed this. It was fun. And the neighborhood's been very quiet. There's been nothing for me to comment on this afternoon.
Well, you didn't even tell about meeting Tom and Judy.
Oh, yes. Well, I met Judy. She was quite a chatterbox. But Tom didn't say a word to me, did you?
He's not. He's very quiet.
Yes.
And
they have a dog. And the dog's name is Jasper.
And they've only... they're a retired couple. They've only recently married.
They were high school sweethearts.
High school sweethearts. And then they married other
somebody
people.
Else. Yeah.
And didn't he go in the service?
He went to the service. She went to college.
And they met... years
during
later?
The pandemic, they reconnected on classmates.com.
What?
Not a sponsor.
What?
Yes, classmates.com, and then reconnected with each other and fell in love.
My goodness.
Right?
Well, I don't know much about classmates.com. Is it fun, like Nextdoor?
Oh, classmates.com is something you pay to reconnect with your classmates.
Oh.
Yeah, which you've already done.
I didn't pay anything.
No, but you have reconnected with your
classmates. Oh, right. But that's what Facebook is for, and it's free.
Yes.
If you can get past all of the bad vaccine takes and whatnot.
Oh, God.
Well, we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
And you know what we're doing next week?
What are we doing next week?
Dialing H for Hero.
Dial H for Hero. Wait, you did a theme song for that.
I sure did.
Oh, great. Are you going to put it in the
Yes, you bet.
Podcast? Cool.
I should do a theme song for Captain Storm.
You should. We certainly...
Captain Storm, peg leg PT boat, Captain Storm.
You have to work on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, we have Space Canine Patrol Agents, which I'm also going to write a song for.
Oh, my God.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that I'm planning ahead?
I am surprised, but I'm excited.
Frankly, I am too.
Yes.
Well, we'll be back next week.
Yes.
With Dial H for Hero, boy inventor Robbie Reed.
Awesome.
And the Martian Manhunter.
Oh, cool.
All right. You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your free podcasts from. And you can find us right back here next week.
Bye.
I need the sunlight shining down to help me see. I need to feel the warmth you bring to me. And make it shine, make it bright again. Make it nice, make things right again. Make it shine, make it.